My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismath.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to a very special preview edition of The Level. That's right. We have turned our seats around and we are sitting on them backwards. And we're letting you in for a scoop, a preview of episode number 300. That's right. It is The Level, The Road to 300.
The Slater edition.
Yeah. So we're going to go back through and ask some of your longest standing, hard pressing questions for us from previous multiplayer, free play multiplayer prompts. We're going to give biographics. We're going to give the stories from behind the scenes and things like that. And at the end, there will be a sneak preview of what's going to happen on episode number 300. So thank you. I'm very happy that you two could join me for this behind the scenes peek.
Who's going to die?
Yeah. Imagining some sort of like Cole doing like the Inside the Actors Guild type of thing.
Oh yeah. Man. Yeah.
I want to just say out the gate, I am impressed with the questions that you have stored. There are questions from 2016 in here.
People, I mean, I don't know if people believe that I kept them, but I do.
I didn't.
Yeah. They're in here, and you know, just we haven't gotten to all of them. You know, it's been a while since we've done a free play cleanup.
To be fair, I don't think I believe that you didn't keep them.
Well, even if I didn't keep them, like they're still there on Facebook. Like I could go back and you know backfill them. It'd be fine.
Yeah, because but, nothing disappears from Facebook.
No, I mean unless you're conservative. That's right, we're talking about social media censorship of free thought here on The Road to 300.
We're gonna become that's gonna be our main focus with episode 300 and from then on.
So I mean we start every episode asking what's going on. I'm gonna drop the ad for right now. We start every episode usually talking, seeing what's up. Ben, what's going on?
So I was going to say, just to unroll the curtain, we had a depressing conversation before the show, but we're not going to have that now.
About news, not like, yes, not yes. You know, yeah, it just in case anybody worry, just worry the normal, no, amount, not extra no. special worry.
Thankfully, life is going swimmingly right now. I'm going to a friend's wedding this Saturday, and we're going camping before that for a bachelor party. So tomorrow I am traveling. So I am looking forward to all of that. That should be a nice, relaxing couple of days. So.
Nice. Yeah. No, the place where you're going, I don't want to give up your, I don't want to compromise your operational security.
I'm going to Red River Gorge. I'll be out of there by the time this hits the air.
Cool. So. I really wanted to go down there at some point, just rent a cabin and stay there for like a week, but I never managed to make it happen. I could still happen. It's not like
I'll send you the address if you want to make that happen, Cole. Like it's...
no, it just it always looked like a really cool, like nice place to be. But yeah, no, I guess like closer here would be like to where I'm at, like Mohican, or even down to like Hawking Hills, stuff like that. Ohio has a lot of like really nice, like mountain lakes and gorges and stuff like that. Rivers, lots of good outdoors.
Yeah, it's got good cabin country.
Yeah, well, Red River Gorge is Kentucky, not Ohio. I'm dumb.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, Smoky Mountains, that whole area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. David, how about you?
Not too much. Things are just kind of going. I'm learning the programming language Haskell. Which is basically like if math wanted to be a programming language.
is that extremely low level programming?
It's actually the other way around.
Oh, it's like Perl, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of like, you know how eventually you get to math that doesn't need numbers anymore.
Yeah.
This is like when you do programming that doesn't need computers anymore. Gotcha. Almost. Like
it's mystic incantations.
It's a functional programming language, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a purely functional programming language. Hmm. Yep.
So everything in it is a function.
Okay. That sounds very confusing. So just nests upon nests upon nests upon nests.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah, so like technically speaking, there's no side effects in Haskell, which becomes a problem when you realize that, for example, putting something on the screen is a side effect. So like, and I haven't quite gotten to this point, so I'm probably explaining it, you know, not quite right. But like the way they get around it is you basically have a function and you pass like what you want to do and like what the state would be like if you did that. And then it makes that be the state so that technically there was no side effect.
Oh.
And so like it's basically the equivalent of doing the like, what if we kept the spaceship in place and moved the universe around it?
Gotcha.
So that's kind of the thing where it's like, when I say it's like the whole, you know, just if it wanted to be math, it's like, yeah, you guys maybe didn't have to do that.
Yeah, my knowledge of this stuff is really out of date. I had heard of Haskell, but I think in my head I had mixed that up. Like, it basically what it sounded like, what it sounded like you said was, oh, I'm learning Fortran. And I'm like, no, that's, I mean, what is this? Are you looking for a job at Sierra in the late 70s?
To be fair, apparently Fortran is actually super employable now.
There's a lot of monolithic software that was written into the 80s that still exists, and even though people stopped learning it, so...
Gotcha. Yeah. Huh.
I mean, I don't want to learn it. Any programming language that doesn't even have loop. Well, okay. Any programming language that isn't Haskell that doesn't have loops.
Yeah, it's like programming on hard mode.
Gotcha. Yep. Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I wish I knew more about it so I could talk with you more about it, but I don't know.
You're fine.
The road to 300. No. And I'm having a boring time. I was telling cat stories. That's all I have now is cat stories, but that's fine.
Yeah, Greta's a good cat, so that's fine.
She's okay.
Yeah, I'm pro cat.
Wow. Just okay. Jeez.
Oh man. I need to cut her nails. I'm not looking forward to doing that.
How does she react when people come over? Like if a new guest comes over that's not a family member, how does she react?
So she will be scared at first, but what I will always do is have them hold the treat box.
Yeah.
And after, you know, a handful of treats given one at a time, she will warm up and be okay being in the same room. But like, if there is a professional, you know, like a delivery person, or if there's a contractor who has come and is working inside the house, she goes and hides, which is fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, she is sociable enough when it comes to just kind of like regular plainclothes people being in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain the concept of like cutting a cat's fingernails to me? Like that seems like that would result in a great deal of blood loss on your part.
Well, what you do is you have to make a cat burrito. So you wrap them up in a towel. You're actually like you can hold on to the front paws, but it's the back claws that you have to worry about. And then when you're cutting the front, and then you need to worry about the front claws when you're doing the back claws. Yeah, she's just not terribly comfortable doing it. Normally a cat will kind of maintain them by doing a bunch of scratching and by actually biting at them and pulling off like the outer layers.
Okay.
Yeah, but no.
So this isn't a thing where like it wouldn't have scratchy claws. It's just more like maintaining them.
Yeah, because like otherwise it's kind of like humans, like a person, if you just let your nails grow out, they'll get ingrown and go all weird. Picture if I was going around and I just had, you know, posts made of sisal rope that I was scratching at every time I passed it, I probably wouldn't need to cut my nails every 2 weeks like I do, you know.
Life hack.
So why aren't you doing this?
Yeah. Okay, human scratching posts. Yeah, no, just like it can get pretty gnarly if they grow too long and it like curls in on itself. It's pretty pretty rough. Sense. Also, it's painful. Like, you know, she'll hop on my belly when I'm reading on the couch, and you know, knead and take her paws, yeah. and it'll not cut, like it won't bleed, but it'll hurt pretty bad.
Yeah.
So you just cut the little tips off, and then it ends up being fine. Yeah, the road to 300.
You really want to mess Check with here. A Mew. If you really want to mess with a Mew, you get some fingernail polish and, you know, give her a French manicure or whatever it's
like,
called.
You can do that. Like, there are, like, little caps you can put on the end of cat's claws.
That's awesome.
Not kitten mittens, but, like, they're just, like, little, not vinyl. Little like acrylic caps that you put on, and you can have them in different colors and stuff. It kind of seemed like they would just bite them off, you know, mm-hmm. but people talk about that. Like, oh, if your cat just can't stop scratching stuff, and it's like, well, I don't know, give them stuff to scratch and train them to scratch the stuff you want them to scratch. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cat nail caps is what they're called.
Okay. Well, they look kind of cute. I just don't know if they would work, you know?
I did not know this was the thing. It looks, it's not, it's like a cousin of kitten mittens.
With the kitten mittens, meow. Yeah. So the road to 300, we have your questions you want to know. These are really, really pressing things. David, you have you have raised one up here that I'm going to bring us here. Jonathan asks, what's your favorite tree?
Merkel tree.
Oh, yeah?
It's a math thing. It's not an actual tree.
Hey, you know what? Jonathan wasn't specific. You won over. It counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, David?
So, I actually kind of chose this because I have a way too much opinion on this than I should.
Okay.
I think probably my favorite, Appalachian hickory, which is you know, one of the arguably the best wood for making like wooden weapons out of.
Okay.
It's very, very hard and dense, and the outside will actually like condense as it you know, gets repeatedly impacted, and so you'll have like the outside very hard and then a flexible core. Consequently, my least favorite is pecan, which is what a technically a hickory, but a whole bunch of places sell it as hickory when it kind of isn't.
Okay.
I think most overrated, I posted a picture, is Purple Heart.
Okay, this is a guitar. Is that stained, or is that the actual heart color? No,
that's the actual wood.
Okay.
The reason I say most overrated, it's beautiful, except that as it's exposed to UV light, which aka like sunlight, it just fades to just brown.
Oh.
So like, it's really, really beautiful in the short run, just kind of whatever in the long run.
Gotcha. And there's not something appealing to you about the temporariness of that?
I guess you could go for like a wabi-sabi or however that's pronounced thing.
You know.
But I
don't know. It's a Buddhist guitar.
For me, like in terms of just like a non-functional tree, I am fond of the red maple. It's very common tree, but I think it's very pretty. Functional tree, cashew tree, my friend.
Cashews are good stuff.
Yeah, cashews are probably my favorite nut. So there we go.
Have you ever looked into apparently almonds actually contain cyanide?
Different kinds, bitter almonds contain cyanide, and we don't really eat bitter almonds over here.
Right. Although I guess like even regular almonds do.
Okay. Sweet almonds is what those are.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I don't know. I like the idea of if I ever wanted to make just some like completely nonsensical, I don't know, like murder mystery book novel or something, I would love the assassination plot to be just get the person to eat. You would have to eat like literally hundreds of sweet almonds for it to kill you.
Well, yeah, you would throw up before that because almonds are really dense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just by just like the image of someone trying to kill someone that way.
All right. So continuing this, Christopher Schley asks, there's a game that exists called I Am Bread. This gives me the excuse to ask, what is your favorite bread? The hard hitting questions, everybody. I will answer this. A pungent rye. Yeah. Not any of that like, oh, we have some rye seeds in here. I want to taste it.
I'll say I get down with a nice potato bread.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah.
I think if I'm going for like more or less off the shelf, I'm a big fan of sourdough. Recently, I've been experimenting some with baking hardtack.
Okay.
So basically just, you know, flour and water and then, you know, cook it for a couple hours and at low temperature till there's no water anymore.
Yeah. Are you familiar? Have you seen the YouTube channel Townsend's?
No. What's that?
Townsend's is a dork who lives in Indiana. Like his whole business is actually selling clothing and gear from the 18th century. Like he is a huge American Revolution kind of guy. He has an amazing YouTube channel that is one of the most entertaining things that you'll ever see. Just where he talks about basically like mostly the cuisine and cooking of the 18th and very early 19th century.
Nice. I would definitely check that out.
Yeah, no, you would love it. It's incredibly good. So I don't know. That's just a recommendation.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Well, so do you just eat the hardtack? What are you doing with the hardtack?
Yeah, so my goal is, I'm not saying like not going crazy with this, but my goal is just kind of experimenting with to what degree I can get like a significant portion of like vitamins and minerals in that.
Okay.
And then also I eat, a lot of things on bread. So like for breakfast, I usually do like, say like a bagel or something with, tons of peanut butter on it, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so my goal is to be able to, cook all the bread I need like once a year or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that way you just go in and break yourself off a square of it.
Yeah. Because this stuff literally will last for like decades.
Well, that's why that was the purpose, right? They just put it in the hold of a ship.
Yep.
Hope the raft didn't get it.
Yep. So it's also been interesting. And again, this is much more in the realm of like hobby experimenting with things as opposed to like actually a significant portion of my diet, but like experimenting with like, oh, there's like, because veganism is now a thing, or, now a much more mainstream thing, like, there's tons of different types of flour. So, like,
yeah.
I can mix almond flour and, say, rice flour, and my bread is now a complete protein.
Yeah, and you're, in a relatively good place to, like, get a hold of that stuff, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so, nice. One thing I cannot get a hold of is dehydrated citrus pulp. Okay. I cannot find anyone that will sell that.
Huh. Do you have to make that yourself?
I'm debating trying to make it. I mean, apparently it is something you can buy wholesale, but the problem is, like, I'm not wholesale.
Right. You would need an EIN. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or TIN or whatever, yeah. Huh.
But...
Yeah. I didn't expect this to actually turn into a conversation like that. and then rounding out the hardest hitting of the questions, nearly a year later, Chris, sorry, more than a year later, Chris also asks, what the heck is your favorite fruit? We'll get to the game stuff. It was very fun to see all these pop up, and I wanted to hit all three of them.
What the heck? I will say the fruit that I eat the most is bananas because they give out free bananas in Seattle at certain places downtown. Yeah.
Cool.
Wait, like, I mean, that's awesome, but why?
So it's like technically, so it's put on by Amazon, and it's they bill it as it's for like the community, but there's kind of like an asterisk on it where it's like they only have a stand that's available during working hours on weekdays.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's still free. Anyone, they won't, you know, deny anybody bananas, but it is kind of slated for the people who work at Amazon a little bit.
Gotcha.
But,
yeah. Huh. Yeah. I don't know. I know that these aren't really fruits. Don't get at me with like botanical taxonomy. Love blueberries.
I didn't know they were not fruits.
I mean, the berries, fruits. There's a whole thing. Whenever you say something is or isn't a fruit, technically bananas are berries too.
Oh my god.
Yeah. No, somebody will come at you and say, actually, it's not.
See, but then I could turn the tables on them and be like, well, my favorite fruit is the avocado.
Mm-hmm.
The tomato.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe technically avocados are droops.
Are they?
Yeah.
Maybe you're a droop. I have to say, like, if I was going to get technical, I would say avocados are amazing.
Uh-huh.
But if I was...
that's my technical answer.
Yeah, if I was getting more to the spirit of this, that's a tough one. I eat a ton of apples, but I feel like if I was gonna go with it, maybe something more exotic like pomegranates. Pretty
pomegranates, good.
I really want to try. Whenever I walk through the Chinatown, there's all these like fruits that definitely came from a like Mario level.
There's like lots of radishes with little faces on them.
Well, that I was thinking more, there's all these like weird spiky fruits that like I'm pretty sure someone has thrown at me when I've been playing Mario.
Are they selling durian? What's
maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're just crazy fruits I've never seen before. But the one I really want to try, have you ever heard of, they call it like miracle fruit or something?
Isn't that actually like that's a pill that you take that makes that makes everything taste sweet, right?
But I thought it was.
Is it actually a fruit?
It actually is fruit derived. Yeah, I was looking up to see. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fruit that when eaten causes sour foods to taste sweet.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, you probably just order that and try it. And then talk about it on a YouTube channel.
Yeah. most horrifying fruit, as a side note, is betel nut.
What is a betel nut?
What? Yeah. So, is it going to be scarier than cat nail caps?
It's basically a what like Indonesia had to be chewing tobacco before chewing tobacco was a thing.
Okay.
Ooh.
It's, if you ever see, sometimes you'll see pictures of like someone from Southeast Asia with like their teeth stained bright red.
Okay. It's because they
from chewing that. And yeah, it's basically if you took like chewing tobacco and made it like 30 times worse for your health.
Huh.
Dang. That's surprising that it's like naturally occurring too.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of dental horror here if you search for betel nut.
Yeah, no, that's I mean, hopefully they're fine. probably not.
I mean, it'll straight up jack you up. I mean, well, you know, yeah, it's like
what's the functional compound in it?
I'm not
beetle.
Sure. I, like my My understanding is that it's basically a very similar effect to like tobacco. So
it has, does it have like nicotine? Let me see here. It has placed the nuts in its, the FDA has placed the nuts in its poisonous plants database, a fact sheet on betel nut with tobacco issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warns the following medical conditions are associated with betel nut use with tobacco: oral submucous fibrosis, oral cancer, addiction, reproductive issues. But that also sounds like that those are, I mean, those are tobacco side effects too.
Huh. Yeah, it's but unlike that, it also will jack up like your liver, esophagus, stomach, prostate, cervix.
Yeah.
So, but the reason I know it actually is there's actually some techniques in CLOT that just basically boil down to like spit in your opponent's eyes and run.
Damn.
Yeah, that would probably mess up somebody's eyes really bad.
Yeah, that would probably, like, I feel like you wouldn't even have to like hit them. Like, no. If you were about to throw down with someone and they just spit at you and ran, like, you'd probably be pretty confused for long enough for them to get away.
I think I would be too mad to do anything. There's a picture on the Wikipedia that is just a bunch of like orangish red spit along the concrete. Yeah, no, yuck, gross.
Yeah, that's a bad thing. It's the one scenario where the West introduced tobacco to a place and made people's lives better.
Oh, wow. The road to 300 is what we're doing here. Who has a question from the list that they want to bring up?
Should we do video game related?
Yeah, if you want to. I don't care. It's the road to 300. Anything goes.
Oh, my God.
Ben, pick a question.
All right. I'll do this one. If you could make any video game into a movie, which one would you do it if it was guaranteed to be good?
Big caveat. Yeah. If it was guaranteed to be good.
Would it be cheating to say, like, one of the Lovecraft games, because then that's an end road around getting a good Lovecraft movie?
That's not a bad answer at all. Yeah.
No. Just so picked Dark Corners of the Earth, and that would be get a good adaptation of Shadow over Innsmouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are good Lovecraft inspired movies in the Mouth of Madness, you know?
I've never seen it, actually.
It's really good.
Didn't he write that? That's
Lovecraft? No, it just sounds like something he would write.
Oh, he wrote Mountains of Madness, right?
Yes. Yeah. apparently, so like, I'm really surprised. The Color Out of Space star Nicolas Cage is actually getting good reviews, which seems crazy to me. Yeah, I want to see it real bad, but I don't know when it's coming here.
So I think if I was really going to go with it, I think I'd say Probably either Bloodborne, I would love to see, which is kind of the answer I just gave, mm-hmm. or like any of the spectacle fighting games.
Spectacle fighting games.
Like Bayonetta, Metal Gear Rising. Oh, like
character action kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is tough because my mind immediately goes to horror games. Yeah, I don't know that I have an answer. Ben, you go ahead.
I think my answer would be something that's like more like atmospheric. I would say like Shadow of the Colossus would be sweet, if they could make that into a good game. Although just playing I'd probably just want to upgrade a game maybe. Mm-hmm. Also, I think The Witness, just because I wanted to see how somebody could make a narrative out of that game.
If it was guaranteed to be good.
Yeah, it's guaranteed to be good, right? Yeah. And so I get more Witness content, but I also get to see them somehow make a narrative out of that. So,
Here's mine. If we're doing the same thing, I'm just going to steal your question or steal your answer. Myst.
Ooh,
yeah, I love the world of Myst. I want to see, you know, they could adapt the book of Atris or something like that. But yeah.
Did Colt, have you played Abduction?
I've played like halfway through it.
Okay.
I know you played it, and it suffered by having come out in the same year as The Witness, right? For you personally.
Yeah, but I mean, I still liked it. I thought it was a good standalone game for sure. I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't compare the two so closely, I guess.
Right. They're different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like there's probably some sort of backward thing you could do where there's probably bad games that could actually make pretty good movies.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like maybe the original,
like Prey, the Stanley Parable.
Well, that too. I was thinking like the original Prey, like if someone just went all in on like 80s style like Native American fighting aliens, like I bet you could make a great 80s action movie out of that.
Yeah, yeah, that's an interesting caveat to add on to it too. Like, just what era would you want the movie to be from?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want us to answer that version of the question, but
also, yeah, somebody needs to ask it first.
I love that on IMDb, under like their more like this for the Keller Out of Space, they have a biography about Mr. Rogers.
Won't You Be My Neighbor?
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, apparently.
Maybe. All I know is I watched some biography about Mr. Rogers on an airplane, which was the worst mistake anybody has ever made in the entire history of the universe.
Why?
I mean, it's a wonderful, the story of Mr. Rogers is, you know, incredible. But there's a thing where, like, you are more likely to cry at a movie on a plane. Like it's actually studied. So here I am sitting there, trying not to sob because it is so affirming and inspirational. Dang. Yeah, no, I'm actually tearing up thinking about it. Yeah.
But you're less likely to cry when you're on a podcast. Studies right. have shown.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Studies have shown.
Yeah, I have nothing to back that up. I want to do one more question, too, because okay. I think there's Raghavan asks, what is your take on the use of symbolism in media? Is there a threshold where you consider it to be overblown? I feel its right place is flavor text, and when you try and bury the meat of your movie and game in symbolism while they have a very bland plot, that's just pretentious. Like Jacob's Ladder versus One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Hey!
Interesting. He doesn't say which one's which.
Okay. yeah, this is, I don't know. It is such a, I know it when I see it kind of thing that it's hard to like establish criteria, you know, like you can even see this in, you know, like across a series. So I'm streaming Silent Hill Origins right now. And you know that there is like some weird Oedipal symbolism that's present there, that like even though the base story, you know, does concern a very bad relationship between a mother and son, there's not necessarily an awful lot to support that, you know. Whereas, you know, monster design in the, you know, specifically the first three Silent Hill games, incredibly good and symbolic and in a way that really works. So yeah, it's tough. Like, you know, I think that it is impossible to, you know, it is very difficult to have good meaning without symbolism, because otherwise it is just describing what you are attempting to communicate directly, and there is no art to that. But you can lay it on too thick.
I think you can also have kind of an interesting thing where, like, you can have symbolism, I guess, that can be effective but doesn't necessarily have any meaning. So I think of, like, you know, there's definitely sections of, say, like, Dark Souls or the Soulsborne series that gets a lot of mileage out of, like Christian symbolism, but has very little to actually do with anything. It's more just, like, this was designed to like look profound and otherworldly.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's like it is approximating this kind of specifically like Western Gothic kind of imagery.
Exactly.
Yeah. How do you feel about it, Ben?
I don't think you can have too much symbolism if you're doing it well. I don't know of an example where there's like too much symbolism. I think the pitfalls of it are if you like try and bend everything towards like a single like idea of like symbolism or something like that, that might not be very good.
Yeah.
I think that's when you start kind of getting into problems. But I think, I mean, my favorite movies are the ones that are just like loaded with symbolism or like allegories. Like I love the movie Mother. It's not like the best movie ever. I wouldn't like, yeah, but it's like, yeah. I thought it was very enjoyable. So
yeah. Speaking of Christian imagery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did either like Watch Out for Fireballs or Abject Suffering or one of those ever do I Divine Cybermancy?
So we did a premium episode of I Divine Cybermancy, a premium episode of Abject Suffering about it, and it was one of those things where like a bunch of people just kind of wanted to backdoor a waff about it. You know, like, hey, play this and react to it. And ultimately what it came down to is, yeah, this is janky, but it's really interesting. And I'd be curious to see more, you know, so maybe we'll cover it on WAF someday.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's kind of one of those weird cases of like, I feel like it'd probably be fair to say like, obviously Abject Suffering is supposed to be bad games and WAF is supposed to be good games. And I feel like it's one of those rare games that like, would be totally justified to be in both.
Yep.
But that's a game that like maybe goes a little overboard with the symbolism if I had any idea what the game was about.
Yeah, no, like anytime something is like, oh, we're going to be playing around with Gnosticism, it's like, you sure you want to do that? Is it like that always seems to be like it is the hallmark of hubris. In game stories, is like we're just gonna bring some Gnosticism into this.
Yeah. Wait, I'm a Claude. What is Gnosticism?
Gnosticism was
a early and actually continuing Christian heresy, at least from like the perspective of mainstream Christianity, that was most known for one being based around the idea of like hidden knowledge. So there being some sort of hidden knowledge that you need to know. And then also based on viewing a strong distinction between the spirit and the physical, which as a result, for example, the Gnostics generally argue that Jesus didn't actually incarnate physically because they view the physical world as being innately corrupt or evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. it's incredible, like an overly mystical version of like early Christianity.
Yeah. And so like okay. it's still to this day like one of the big kind of strains or whatever of like Christian mysticism.
Yeah.
I like how there's two meanings to that.
Yep. Let's see here, David, what's the question you want to bring forward here?
Oh, sorry. I was still trying to understand how they made a movie out of color out of space. Let's see. I feel like this is a kind of a overtly up our alley one, but Dan Sayer asked, I just picked up Dark Souls and am currently making my way through the Undead Parish. If you each have one piece of advice, what would it be? No, I'm playing offline.
So Dan asked this question back in April. So they're probably done, but let's pretend that they have been waiting for us, waiting for us to offer this advice. I'm sorry that we're late.
Just listens to every fifth episode. Yeah. Like maybe this time.
Ben.
Yeah. I look up a walkthrough. That's the best advice I can give. I have no better advice. I'm sorry.
Yeah. David.
So I think that I have two pieces of advice, but I'm interested here. Like, I learned them from the later Soulsborne games, so you'll have to tell me if they're actually applied to Dark Souls.
Okay.
From Dark Souls 3, definitely learn to use and love what do they call it, where certain weapons just like can't be interrupted.
Poise?
No, yeah, I guess. So, if you're using like the ultra great swords.
Oh yeah, no, they give you like hyper armor and stuff. That is very much a Dark Souls 3 thing.
Okay. Yeah. And then the other one, which I learned doing, chalice dungeons. So I don't know if it applies outside Bloodborne. Is walking instead of running is actually a very, very valid strategy.
At least until you learn a space.
Huh?
At least until you learn a space.
Right. Well, yeah. And also just like at least Bloodborne actually can be a fairly passable stealth game if you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know if that applies. I guess then the opposite is also true. Like running past enemies is a very important life skill in Dark Souls.
Yeah. I would say learn about weapon scaling. And also look into the exact effects of upgrading weapons. That is especially around the time of the Undead Parish before you go into the lower Undead Burg. That is a good time to learn it, so you are ready to approach the Capra Demon.
I'm just curious. Why the Capra Demon?
Capra Demon, mostly if you are playing the game with a shield, which they're obviously, that is like the primary way that you want to start playing Dark Souls. Capra is almost there entirely to check if you have upgraded your shield with higher stability.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think I got there maybe relatively late because like I just straight up like DPS'd it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you get lucky, I'm not saying oh, you could have only done that by getting lucky, but not everybody
totally.
Not everybody has the same, has the same walls. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's also an interesting piece of advice is just like the game's freaking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it'll find your weakness. We say that all the time.
Did they ever determine was it at least semi-intended that you could just, beat that boss by throwing shit at it?
No, I think it was just a quirk of the engine that they decided to leave in. I don't even know if that I don't know if you can do that in the remaster. Don't know. But it's absolutely a way you can get through it. It's not a fun way, but you can.
I mean, that's how the game is, right?
Oh man. Let's see here. Let's do a little bit. Good.
I got two more in the hopper, so if you need to call on someone, let me know.
Okay. Yeah. No, good. Go ahead, Ben.
All right. Alexander McConnell writes, I'll offer a multiple choice with mine. Either, what is one thing in games that's gone out of style that you'd like to see come back, or one thing games have never done or never done well that you'd love to see a game totally nail? So I got an answer for mine. So I'll start off while you guys think about this one, maybe.
Okay.
I think for the second question, one thing I haven't seen a game done that like I've seen done in movies that I really like is a genre swap. So like there's some movies I think that are really good where it's like halfway through the movie, like something happens and then the movie completely turns. This is no longer like a romantic comedy. It's now a horror movie, or this is no longer like an action movie. It's now a bottle episode type thing.
Think adaptation.
Yeah. Yep. Or like Psycho might be a good example.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like a significant portion of those either start or end as either action or horror.
Yeah, I mean, there's still only so many genres.
Yeah.
Well, true.
I haven't seen a game nail that. You know, like there's some cases of like Halo with like the Flood, mm-hmm. But it's not like a complete genre switch. You know, it's just kind of like a new mechanic.
Yeah. So. David, how about you?
So I think something I'd like to see that I feel like no game's ever done is actually having more nuance with its with the consequences of your like good and evil decisions.
Okay.
So in terms of like, say you decide to, I don't know, spare a bad guy. And then when they go on to kill someone, you have to explain to that person's mother why you spared them. Or alternately, you decide to kill the bad guy and then have to break the news to the families of anyone in your party that died during the process.
Hmm.
Like, you know, actually showing the nuance of like sometimes, you know, sometimes all decisions are bad.
Game kind of sounds like L.A. Noir, where the majority of it is explaining to someone why somebody died.
I mean, so recommendations are a particular kind of violence, and I don't expect you to follow through on this because it's such a big thing. What you're describing is really similar to The Witcher 3, David.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because so much of that is about making difficult choices with imperfect information and then dealing with the consequences on the other side. And okay. Explicitly, there is no like good or evil. Like there are different philosophies that are apparent in the different choices that you can make, but it is all like situational. So it's like, okay, am I pragmatic? Do I hold to like what witchers generally do? You know, am I compassionate, etc.? And so those two things working in tandem add up to about the effect that you're talking about.
Nice. I have to check that out.
You don't talk to families of people that you killed, though. Yeah,
sometimes you have to face down families of people you let die.
You don't get to talk to the werewolves or the dragons' families, though.
there's one specific place where you do have to talk to the family of the werewolf.
What? Really?
There's a contract you have to do.
Yeah. All right, well, never mind.
Also, to be fair, I would definitely play the hell out of a DLC that was you then going and breaking the news to the dragon family.
Mm-hmm. and
also, I don't know if this is ever a thing either directly or indirectly, but I really want... At some point, if you take too many missions for free, the Witcher Union to come after you.
You can't. You can't take missions for free.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I knew you weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
You barter, right? Could you barter for zero every time?
I don't know if it'll let you. I never saw how low it would go. I just always added 10% to the base price and called it a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know you very explicitly weren't supposed to. I didn't know if it... didn't let you or not.
Yeah, there's only like a handful of times where it's even an option to forgo payment. Yeah, and also there was something they built into the first DLC. Yeah, mild spoilers. Who cares? Where if in the base game before they patched this out, you exploited a particular drop to make a bunch of money. The game figured out if you did that, and a tax collector would come and ask you questions. Like it involves, you know, like, oh, like, have you ever killed cattle needlessly to harvest their hides or what have you?
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Just good stuff. What was the other question you had held back there, Ben?
The other one is, which sequel would you rather have? This was asked by Michael Pren in 2018. Which sequel would you rather have, Coder 3 or Kingdoms of Amulet 2? One condition, all the hosts have to reach a consensus.
So Kingdoms of Amalur. Sorry, just to make sure, because Kingdoms of Amulet sounds like a good video game name. Yeah.
So obviously, I'm voting for Coder 3, but
yeah,
do we have consensus?
I would vote for Coder 3 as well. This might be more difficult if Dennis was on, because I think he played and likes Kingdoms of Amalur. But I don't think he would get in the way of your dream being fulfilled of getting a Coder 3.
On the other hand, I definitely would.
Damn it, David.
I do have to say, though, with some of this, if we choose Kingdom of Amalur, do we also get to choose a new state to bankrupt?
You know that story, right, Ben?
I feel like I've heard this before. Which state got bankrupt because of this?
So Rhode Island didn't go bankrupt, but I believe that for a time, the state of Rhode Island owned the intellectual property for Kingdoms of Amalur, because the studio, which was founded by Kurt Schilling, who at the time was like recently retired from being a baseball player, like he was part of the 2004 Red Sox team that won the World Series. Now he is a fucking chud, like Trumpist, who goes around, you know, talking about how women can't do things and just kind of being backwards about everything. But during the, like during his game development phase, they set up the studio in Rhode Island in order to take care of like, not just massive tax cuts, but actually like grants, because they were trying to attract the video game industry to Rhode Island, which, you know, fine, it's a pretty place, go to places any to set up a, you know, to set up a studio. But they went there, they put the game out, they basically bankrupted the studio and took everything down with them. That this single-handedly ended that program, and part of the settlement for basically the studio dissolving was what was that the property rights went to Rhode Island. Part of the problem was they were initially developing Kingdoms of Amalur as an MMO, but then they made it single player because they couldn't execute on an MMO in that market.
See, the thing I don't get, though, is like, if you're going to do a scam, why would you actually make a good game?
I don't know that they intentionally scammed anything. I think they were just incompetent. And we're shielded from the consequences, mostly.
Well, I guess if you're incompetent, how do you accidentally make a good game?
Well, you can make a good game, but still not succeed. Yeah. It just doesn't sell. Good games don't sell all the time.
True. Failure finds a way.
That would be the title if I didn't already choose The Road to 300.
Yeah, so I would also counter, isn't the Star Wars MMO Coder 3?
People say that, but
no.
No. Yeah, it's still an MMO. People say that, but I don't believe them.
That would be like a sad, like,
will have to be the tiebreaker.
That'd be like a sad genie solution to this. Is like, all right, so you finally get consensus, and then the game's just really bad.
You're
like,
oh yeah, shit. It's just the old Republic. Yeah. Justin writes, Do any of you enjoy the feeling of being lost, or is it necessarily a negative experience in a game? Are all mazes bad? No, I don't think all mazes are bad. Justin was a guest on our the WoF episode about Ultima Underworld. I love those mazes. Like, yeah. Being lost is probably the most anxiety I feel in my, you know, not everyday life, but commonly. I like mazes and games. I like drawing out maps of stuff. I don't like when they start putting like teleporters in or you drop between levels and stuff. But like, a good maze in a game is fun.
Yeah, this is very much one of those things that like I could never go back to. But I do sort of miss like EverQuest pre-mapping, where you would actually, you know, learn to navigate cities and stuff.
Yeah. Nope. I mean, EverQuest is going to be one of my examples, too. Like, just the feeling of being lost when you were traveling between cities, you know, and like you walk into what is very much the wrong part of a map, and all of a sudden something that cons red is coming right at you, and you're running for the guards, hoping, praying you're going to get there. Printing out the maps that somebody had made, like in colored pencil on Alakazam. No, I've still got those old printouts. I kept them all.
See, I would love to see more games do. I really loved it. I think someone maybe talked about this. I don't know. I don't know if it was here or a stream I was listening to or something like that. Talk about like EverQuest with the cloth maps you got in some of the things, where they would just be sort of, in a very vague sense where things were relative to each other. And I remember the original Dark Souls had that. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to see that be a mechanic more, where you have a very, I guess, kind of symbolic map, but not one that's necessarily completely accurate.
You ever play the Thief games, David?
I have not, actually. I feel like they'd probably be up my alley, but I have not.
That's what they have, is symbolic maps.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and it doesn't even like show you where you're at on them. You have to orient. You have to orienteer yourself.
Nice.
Let's do a few more and then call it a night. David, what's another question you have from the nice people?
Sure. So, Josh, Circle. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm messing up that last name.
That's fine. Happens all the time.
Asked, what's a game that you tried once or twice and for some reason it wasn't for you, then coming back to it later it became one of your favorites? For me, it was Dark Souls. Someone had to mention it. I tried it 3 separate times, each more pitiful than the last. Then a year later I picked it up again after meeting a new friend who was into it. I was hooked after having a giant bit of luck with the Taurus demon as he fell off the bridge. Since then I've gone and obtained the platinum for all but Demon Souls. I love these games so much, and I'm happy I gave it another shot.
Don't platinum Demon Souls. It's too much bullshit you have to do.
Also, as a side note, can't the Taurus demon fly?
No.
Okay. I thought it had wings.
No, he can jump real high.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll jump up on that tower if you go up there. Fall
damage. That's what I learned from City of Heroes.
I mean, canonically, yes, Dark Souls for me, so I have to scramble for another answer, because Josh used mine. How about you, David?
I'd say Fallout 4.
Hmm.
Really did nothing for me when I first played it, and then came back to it, and it really clicked.
Yeah.
I think the canonical example I always give is I didn't know how to play Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater until one of my college roommates showed me how to play it.
Oh, yeah.
And then that became my favorite game, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Had you played any Metal Gear games before that?
I rented from Blockbuster, I think, Metal Gear Solid 2 when it came out. Mm. And I just, like, straight did not get it at that point. It's just like, controls are weird. I don't like it.
Yeah, no, it's really a very strange, feels strange in your hand. It's like having a flight simulator for a person. I'll go with, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. As a side note, Greg also asked a very similar question. Just to give him a shout out.
Cool.
Yeah, let's knock these out.
We're not going to get to all of them. So. I'll go with Planescape. Planescape, or let's say like Fallout 1, or Fallout 1 and 2. They play very similar. I bounced off of all of those for roughly similar reasons, and then when I forced myself to sit down and play them for a show, they ended up being very, enjoyable, additive entries into my game experience.
So Planescape kind of surprises me, just because I would have pegged that as being right up your alley. I mean, isn't that very adventure gamey?
Like, yeah, a little bit, but it's adventure gamey through the lens of like a top down, semi turn based combat kind of thing. Also, it controls a little bit like a real time strategy game. I just was not able to like match what it was asking me to do. It seemed way too fiddly for me. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Also, like, it does, like, there's really, really cool stuff about the mortuary where you begin that game, but it is incredibly long for an opening dungeon. And it, like, the really, really cool stuff doesn't happen until after you leave it. So just continuing the pattern of those games, games of that ilk or games of that era, and not necessarily leading with their best feats. Yeah. Let's see. It's probably my turn, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's get emotional since I talked about that Mr. Rogers thing. Monstro Gabalino asks, what was the first time, if ever, that you cried because of a story in a video game? I mean, basic answer, Final Fantasy VII.
I need to think about this. I didn't see this ahead of time. Of course, I'll say that I dude missed it over crying, but...
Yeah, no, that is A-okay. I'm not going to ask you to... I'm not going to ask you to do anything you're uncomfortable with.
I'm trying to think if I cried during The Last of Us or not. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. It's fine.
I'm sure that I've gotten emotional over games like that, but I can't. One's not coming to my head.
What about The Walking Dead?
Yeah, I dude missed it to that. Okay. Chapter 5. Yeah, a whole bunch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good...
How about you, David?
So, I'm not sure I can think of any. Definitely, like, I'm someone that, like, you know, will cry in response to things, but I feel like the type of, I don't know, tragedy or whatever that video games tend to deal with tends not to be the type that affects me that way.
Yeah.
I'll throw in a Journey as well towards the end of that game. Yeah.
So just it is hitting you with every single piece of stimulus that it can to provoke that response.
Is it the end or the...
Oh, let's say the last 20% of the game.
Okay. Yeah.
Would be my would be what I would say. Yeah, I remember, like, what was it? There was one weekend where I sat down, I played all of Journey, then I played and beat To the Moon, then I played and beat Dear Esther.
Oh my god.
Go back into the archives and see if you can find that episode.
That's when Cole ceased to have emotions afterwards.
Yep, burned it out. Yeah. Au contraire, I cry more than ever now. Oh, no, but it's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's good to be in touch with your emotions. It's definitely better than the alternative.
Yeah. Oh, man. Does anybody have a final question that they want to bring to bear?
I do.
Okay.
Who is your personal favorite host of the level?
Whoever is listening to me speak right now.
Oh
yeah.
I will legit say you, Cole, with Aww. The rationale being you edit every episode.
That's true. Yeah, I hold all of your fates in my hands. Yeah, this is OMG who's trying to start fights.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'd have to what's the alien newscaster from Futurama, you know,
Morbo
or whatever, you know. All hosts are equally pitiful to David.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I mean, like, this is going to sound like overly diplomatic nonsense, especially coming from me, somebody who has spent a whole lifetime cultivating his own brand of overly diplomatic nonsense. I think we all bring I think we all bring our own thing to this, you know, our own different energies, our own different kind of, like, focuses, styles of analysis. Yeah, none of us is disposable.
I think time will prove you wrong on that completely, but
yeah. Oh, man. I mean, like, if it comes down to the water wars and I have to harvest all of your carbon, yeah, fine. We're like, but we're not there yet. So,
yeah, fair.
Yeah. So that's it for the road to 300. I hope you've learned a little bit about us. We're going to be back next week with more of the... With the episode 300. Here's a little preview of what that's going to be. I mean, it's probably going to be like kind of like a regular episode, but just a little bit more sentimental. It'll be fine.
Slight dude misting and dudette misting.
Oh, it'll be good. I am looking forward to it. So There's no sense in doing like the usual kind of sign off kind of thing, because we don't have the usual structure or all of that.
But nobody asked us to sign off, so we can only respond to questions this podcast.
Yes, we can only respond to your questions, and since nobody asked if it's okay to button up, the episode will never end. No. Thank you for listening. Hope you were okay with / didn't mind this little buffer before episode 300. It made sense to do more than just a 3 style for episode 300, although there is a certain symmetry to 3 and 300. I would like to have more folks on for that. But this was a good excuse to get to more of your questions. You know what to do if you're listening. Ratings, reviews, subscribe if you have not. And Patreon is something to consider as well. Otherwise, though, just come back next week. And, yeah, have a good week. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitch. I stream on Duckfeed TV.
I've been David Meismith. Maybe you'll find me.
If you look hard enough. I've been Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
Yeah. And stick around for episode 300, the road to 300.